Hello and welcome to the Ubuntu podcast. It's season 14, episode 5, and it's the 6th of April. And in this week's show, we're going to be talking about some community news and events and some news headlines. And joining me this week, as every week, it's Alan.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And Martin.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Oh, it's a bit chilly, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
snowing here.
Yeah, it's been snowing on and off all day here. That was unexpected.
Wait. Right, you mean outside. I haven't been outside. I don't know what it's like out there.
Yeah, it's not warm, even though it was last week. It's been a bit of a shift. Typical April weather, I suppose you could say. So, Alan, what have you been doing inside?
I've been being silly on Twitter.
Oh, what's new?
I thought that was you.
So, on the weekend... I can't remember what triggered. I think it was Liam from Gaming on Linux tweeted something. It was just like one word. And I thought, that looks fun. I'm going to get on board with this. And I messaged him a couple of times. And then I thought, do you know what? I'm going to do this from the Ubuntu account. So I just tweeted from the Ubuntu account the pronunciation of the word Ubuntu, which is, you know, Ubuntu, the official pronunciation. And that was it. That kicked off quite a lot of comments just tweeting that Ubuntu. Single most popular tweet for the last 3 months. So,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was hell.
What does that say about the other tweets?
Well, really? Yes. Boring corporate nonsense. It helped that pretty much every other reply, I was replying with additional animated GIFs, appropriate to the subject matter. As people were disagreeing with the pronunciation of Ubuntu. All it was one tweet saying Ubuntu. Like, there was nothing other than that. But it seemed to trigger quite a lot of what they call in the social circles engagement. But it was jolly good fun. It was quite entertaining. Fun. Yes.
Yeah. I saw that and I immediately thought, I think I know who's behind this. I was prepared to lay the blame at your door.
Someone actually replied after like half an hour or something, Popey, is that you?
I saw that. I nearly replied and said, yes, of course it is. But I was like, no.
I had to reply with a shrugging Barack Obama gift.
Yes. It's interesting that fun stuff like that from brands, because, you know, Ubuntu is a brand, even though it's, you know, niche and within, you know, our little sphere of the world. That kind of thing goes across really well.
It can, but also just as well. I mean, there are memes which are shut up brand, where people like the octopus with the laser eyes image. If you've ever seen, I think it's shut up brand or something, where people try and stop you being all hello kids, which is pretty much what I was doing. Yeah.
Martin, have you been silly this week?
Well, it feels like it. We were just talking about it snowing, and I was going to say I've been spring cleaning in the snow, which is, you know, a bit crazy. So I've been sorting my office out, which was long overdue, you know, a bit of a cleanup. I still had boxes from Christmas in here, but in so doing, I have finally set up some Christmas presents of mine, which is a new Razer Huntsman Tournament Edition keyboard and a Razer Nagger left-handed edition mouse.
Do they have RGB LEDs on by any chance?
Oh, yeah, it's RGB to the max, baby. And one of the reasons that I choose Razer products, there are other keyboards and things that I really like the Ducky and Durgood, but they don't have Linux or don't have good Linux support. So compromise a little bit by choosing Razer, but through the Open Razer project and the Polychromatic app, you get full support on Linux for configuring your RGBs, although I only do B on my devices.
Black. Yeah, all the lights switched off.
Blue LEDs are the best LEDs.
Right. I was going to say, you can't have tidied your room up that much because there's computers from 1983 behind you.
It looks like a computer from 1983. It's actually a computer from 2020. So it looks like a Commodore 64. But in fact, it's a My 64 with a modern PC inside it.
Nice.
But I've got this left-handed mouse, like an actual designed for left-handed people mouse, which is the first time I've ever had like a sculpted mouse in my left hand. and it's thrown me for a loop because I've always used sort of agnostic mice, you know, a neutral design, and the button configuration that I've used on mice for the whole time I've had mice in front of me is a right-handed person's arrangement. Mm-hmm. And I use my middle finger to left click and my index finger to right click. And now I've got this sculpted mouse, which raises up, you know, the right side of the mouse. It has mentally confused me about which finger I'm supposed to be clicking with, even though I'm trying to continue to click with the way I've clicked mice for the last 40 years. Good God. So, I've actually got this left-handed mouse, very comfortable.
Cool. And with that, let's get on with the rest of the show. And now it's time for some community news and events. And first up in the community news this time, Martin.
So I saw my good friend and podcasting co-host, Mark.
Oh, hello.
Oh. Back in your box, not you. Mark, it's all about you, mate.
Of course.
Posted on the Ubuntu Discourse.
Yes.
Because you've spoken at the end of last season and the beginning of this season that you had applied for and since achieved Ubuntu membership. And you have now made a little critique on how that membership application process could be streamlined.
Yes, I was fed up with just, you know, moaning about things rather than trying to make them better. So I thought I would put together my thoughts on the process and try and come up with some concrete proposals on how I think the process can be improved, and particularly how I think it can be improved for less technically minded members, because Ubuntu membership isn't just supposed to be for developers and package maintainers. It's supposed to be for anyone with a sustained contribution to the community, and that could be all sorts of things which don't necessarily require you to have things like GPG and an IRC account set up. There's a few things which I think can be improved, particularly around the way that we decide whether people have accepted the code of conduct. I think we could improve the onboarding to IRC, let's put it that way, give people a bit more information, especially these days. I don't think it's I don't think it's a reasonable assumption that people are going to be familiar using IRC, especially considering that it's not even there by default on an Ubuntu desktop anymore. And also, borrowing from Alan's blog, I think that the process for actually creating your application on the wiki could do with improving as well, as part and parcel of improving the wiki as a whole. So I've sort of fleshed out these proposals a bit and posted them on Discourse to invite any comment, and hopefully we can move some things in the right direction. So if you're interested in this sort of thing, then head over to the Discourse and add your comments or your likes or your whatever people do on Discourse, because I'm quite new to that as well.
They discuss is what they do.
They discuss.
I would build on that, and I would immediately say, yes, we should nuke the wiki from orbit and start again with something else that's easier to use and get rid of IRC and use something like Mattermost instead.
Yeah.
Well.
So both of those things could potentially make it a bit easier. It doesn't cover all of the bases. There's also the GPG stuff that needs dealing with. But yeah, I think all of those suggestions are totally rational from the perspective of someone who's just gone through this process, and it's a horrible process.
Mm.
So, yeah, completely agree.
Cool. Alan, what have you been looking at?
I spy with my little eye Yaru Mate for Focal Fossa. So this is everyone's favourite theme on Ubuntu, Yaru, is making its way to another flavour. And now I've heard Martin and others suggest that it would be a good idea to have a Yaru-like consistency across flavors. Now, obviously, each flavor lead can choose to do what they want with their flavor, and you, as the lead of Ubuntu Mate, have chosen to go with the Yaru aesthetic, shall we say.
Yeah, I have. So debuting in 2104 for Ubuntu Mate will be a Yaru-derived theme with a splash of Chelsea Cucumber. And we had lots of people, including friend of the show MacPhail, asking if it would be available for, you know, previous releases of Ubuntu Mate. So we've made it available for Focal Fossa, which is the current LTS. That seems the sensible, low-hanging fruit to offer support for. But like you say, I mean, every flavor project gets to choose their own project directions, but you know, I think it would be really good if all of the Ubuntus had some sort of commonality in look, feel, and design language. And working with the Yaru team has been brilliant. And there is no way we would have been able to deliver a theme of this quality without collaborating with them, because they are expert at this after years of doing this now. And what would take, you know, us days or weeks to remedy, they can turn around in minutes or hours. It's been absolutely fabulous. So, you know, if there are other flavor leads listening to this, considering, you know, giving their Ubuntu flavor a bit of a refresh, then I encourage you to approach the Yaru team and see what they could do to help.
What about you, Mark? What have you found?
There is an Ubuntu on Windows community preview for WSL2. And this is a sort of, you know, you get the sort of Windows Insider builds, which let you see new things that are coming up in Windows before everyone else does. And you have the Ubuntu developer releases, which you can run and see what's coming up in the next release. Well, this kind of brings the two together. So now you can run, it's a sandbox for experimenting in new features which are coming up in WSL2. So this includes something they're calling the WSL Out of the Box Experience, or OOB, which is a sort of a first run wizard based on Subiquity, the server installer. Which gives you an Incursys interface to set up your Ubuntu WSL environment. There's also an Ubuntu WSL command line config tool and a Windows terminal extension for adding an Ubuntu terminal to the Windows terminal app.
Hmm.
And the other interesting thing is that this is going to be based on the current release of Ubuntu, not the LTS. So up until now, you've only been able to get packages for the LTS releases of Ubuntu on top of WSL, whereas this is one of the interim releases, which is interesting.
Yeah. So while I'm still able to, I can say I worked on this a little bit, but this work is mostly from Patrick Wu, who works at Canonical and is the maintainer of WSL utilities, among other things. And yeah, the idea here is that you have to go 2 years between trying out, you know, versions of Ubuntu on WSL. So the idea is to kind of have a bit like, you know, an insider's program at Microsoft for Ubuntu on WSL. So for those people that want to track the latest stuff and stay current with the new features, they can actually, in air quotes, sideload these, you know, preview editions and actually try stuff out early. So it's a bit like the interim releases of Ubuntu. We get, you know, feedback and some testing based on current developments that then improve the quality of what becomes the next LTS release.
Great. And I've actually been using WSL at work now. I've finally managed to go through the process of getting it approved for something we can use. And I've been playing with Docker on Windows, which actually runs on top of, it runs its containers in a WSL VM in the background, which is quite neat.
Have you found that?
It works. You run Docker commands, you get containers.
And is that?
I mean, it's just like running them on Linux, as far as I can tell.
Right. So it's better for you. This is easier than it was before.
Well, before we had to basically spin up a VM in the cloud somewhere and SSH into that and run our stuff there, whereas now we can run it on our Windows machines and do our development locally and run it in containers, which is nice.
Nice.
Martin, what have you seen?
Well, I read with interest on OMG Ubuntu that the Dash to Dock extension is getting support for GNOME 40. And this is interesting because the dock has been shipped in Ubuntu since the switch to GNOME to preserve sort of some of that Unity look and feel and functionality with a side dock. And with the advent of GNOME 40, the default position for the dock in GNOME 40 is going to be along the bottom of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So this is working on incorporating support for dash to dock in this new world. And I think this is a good example of why I know some people will be disappointed by the fact that GNOME 40 won't feature in Ubuntu 20.104, but this is a good example of why this was a prudent decision to not jump to GNOME 40 too soon, because there's a number of I's that need dotting and T's that need crossing in order to actually deliver, you know, a quality experience. So this will all go into the melting pot of improvements to deliver a solid 21.10.
Cool. Alan, how's your wallpaper looking?
Hairy.
as always happens towards the end of the development cycle, the design team come up with a new official wallpaper and along with it a mascot. And these are super polarizing mascots. You know, some people love them, some people hate them. But it doesn't matter. You can change a wallpaper if you don't like it. But this one is especially interesting because it's hirsute, it's hairy, and it's bulbous and
very round,
rotund in places. And some people are, their mind is taking them to new and interesting directions, and they're not seeing a hairy hippo. They're seeing something else, and I don't understand it myself, but okay, it's there. And there have been remixes made of it on Discourse as well, but take a look for yourself. The link will be in the show.
Are they family-friendly remixes that have been made?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Okay.
Next up, Pulse Audio 15 has MSBC codec support to enable Bluetooth wideband speech. What's that then?
Hallelujah. That's what this is. So this has been a long-standing issue in the Bluetooth stack on Linux. In a nutshell, it means that modern Bluetooth headsets that support high quality audio will now have high quality audio on Linux and not sound like you're speaking through an AM radio, which is sort of the current state of the art of headset support on Linux. So this has been much needed for a long time. And, you know, it required a bunch of work, not just in Pulse Audio, but also in the kernel itself in order to hook up all of this. And it's wonderful to see that it's finally arrived or arriving.
Great. And we have an event, Alan?
Yes, Elementary Developer Weekend is 26th to the 27th of June everywhere online. And as they describe it, it is a conference for their way of reaching out to developers, sharing the knowledge they've all collected over the years and providing a space to ask questions and provide feedback. They've got a call for papers open until April 20th, 2021, and they're gathering all this information on GitHub Discussions. I think it's a really interesting and innovative way to plan your event and figure out what talks people want and what talks people are willing to offer by having all the conversations in the open on GitHub. It's really, really well done. They've done a really good job of organizing this. They've set some criteria for what the talks should be. They should be primarily educational, focus on design, engineering, or entrepreneurship, and target an audience anywhere from those seeking to build their first app to experienced developers looking to take their apps to the next level.
There's a lot of things I like about this. The first is I've seen them trying to move more conversation to GitHub Discussions. But this event, I mean, it's called the Elementary Developer Weekend, and the outline is very clearly focused at developers. So putting all of that discussion and planning and collection of ideas on GitHub, a place which is familiar and comfortable to developers, is a very smart move.
And that's all for the community news this week. And now it's time for some news items from the wider tech world. And first up in the news this week, Martin.
So, OBS Studio 27, release candidate 1, has been released. Now, OBS Studio is the de facto standard application for doing live streaming for games and other things in the modern day. And Linux support is right up there, you know, almost a first-class citizen alongside Windows and Mac OS. It's quite remarkable what you can do. And with OBS 27, there's a bunch of really cool new features for all the platforms and then some really cool new stuff just for Linux.
Cool. So I see Wayland support in there. Has that been something, has it only been possible to use with X11 in the past?
That's right. So up to current versions, it's only been an X11 capture system. I think it's fair to call, despite the significant amount of work that's gone into landing Wayland support, I think we can call this like iteration one of Wayland support because it's not quite seamless when you compare it to how window and screen capturing works on X11 and the other platforms, but at least it does actually function now. And what I'm getting at in terms of, you know, why it's not quite the final solution for Wayland is that you can't capture windows or screens seamlessly without it prompting you if you want to authorize this screen capture to proceed. So if you're trying to do a live stream and switching between, you know, different sources, it's a bit stilted. But, you know, this is a great first step for sure. And some of the other improvements that are specifically Linux focused are there are now browser docs available, which means that you can, for example, embed your Twitch or YouTube chat into the OBS UI. So as you're streaming, you can keep a track on, you know, the conversation that's happening. And something that doesn't appear in the release notes for OBS 27, but I know is there, is there's been some work done to actually enable hardware acceleration in browser sources on Linux, which hasn't been there to date, and that's finally been resolved. So it's a really strong release if you're, you know, using OBS on Linux. But then in addition to that, if you're using OBS generally, it's now got undo and redo support, which, my goodness, I'm gonna love that, because the times I would have wanted to have undone a massive mistake are many. And then also, if you want to do fancy animations, you can now trigger animations on making sources visible. And it also has a nice additional feature to Stinger transitions, where you can actually animate your Stinger transitions in a bit more of a fluid way with matte masks and things like that. It's an outstanding release, this one, even without the improvements in the Linux support.
Cool. Alan, what have you found in the news?
Oppo have released a new phone called the Find X3 Pro, and it has a rather unique feature, a camera. I know, right?
Welcome to the 21st century.
I know, right? It has all the usual trappings of a typical smartphone, none of which actually stand out. They, you know, make big deal about all this stuff on the marketing blurb. But the thing that caught my eye was there's a 3-megapixel micro lens camera with 60 times zoom. And for those of you listening at home, I'm doing big bunny ears around micro lens and 60 times zoom. Because there's a little caveat on their website that says the micro lens camera magnification refers to the ratio of the size of an object on the screen to its actual size. Not the magnification factor, just the difference between the size of the real thing and the size of what it is on the screen. The point of this is you can put the lens right up against something, like a couple of millimeters away, and you'll get a super close up of whatever that thing is. So you can see like the fibers in your shirt, or the brush strokes on a painting, or the
hairs on a hippo,
the pixels on a display or something, or the dots that make up the printed word. You know, it's a bit of a toy, but it looks interesting.
That's an interesting feature, and I think I've used the inverse of that capability that exists on every mobile phone camera, which is when my daughter and I, well, not that we've been recently, but when we go to our local museum to do the Lego building stuff, they do these massive Lego mosaics made out of really tiny pieces of Lego, and you get given a sort of a 30 centimeter square and a plan, and you have to lay out a bunch of things. But when you're looking at it in front of you, you can't really make out what it is. So what you do is you get your camera out and look at this thing from the distance, and actually it brings into focus what the thing is that you're actually making and how it all fits together.
So I think what you've highlighted there is it's you're doing something with a camera that's a bit specific and a bit niche. And I think that's what this camera on the Oppo Find X3 Pro is. It's a bit niche. I think it's one of those things where you'll wander around the house taking photos of things and really, really close up. Oh, look, a coin. Oh, my jumper. Oh, here's the surface of a particular type of fruit or something. Or here's the printed word or a photograph. But once you've gone around your house doing that, I think the novelty will wear off and it will be one of those rare usages of the device. But interesting though it is, it looks like the mobile phone companies are desperately trying to find some way to stand out from all the other devices, because they're all running the same Android. They've all got, you know, relatively decent normal cameras and decent screens and video playback. It's all fine. They're trying to find something. I think this is what Oppo have decided to do.
And finally, it's the court case you've all been waiting for. After 10 years, the US Supreme Court has ruled on Oracle versus Google. The decision was split 6-2, and they have ruled that Google's use of the Java API for Android was legal under fair use as a matter of law. So apparently what that means is that they're not just saying that, you know, in this particular case, the way that they did it is fair use. What they're saying is that using APIs, even if they're copyrighted, is fair use according to US copyright law.
And is this a final ruling? Is this it put to bed now?
I don't think that you can appeal against the Supreme Court. I think that they are the final word.
Right. And so, you know, what was the ramification of this? You've talked about, you know, this case, but why is it significant?
Well, basically, there are quite a few examples, particularly in the open source world, about people taking an API which is documented and re-implementing it. I mean, we've spoken a lot about game engines where people have re-implemented a game engine for an old game, so you can take the data files and run it on modern systems. There's also things like Wine, which is taking the Win32 API and re-implementing it so that you can run Windows games on Linux. And there was a concern that if it was found that APIs were copyrightable and that using them wasn't covered by fair use, it would basically torpedo a lot of these projects, or at least put them at risk of litigation by the company who wrote the original API.
I saw a fun tweet from Miguel de Casa, ex-GNOME and Mono developer, pointing out this result and offering people to send their apologies for the attacks on the Mono project in the past to his address, which I completely agree with.
Right.
Yes. I mean, yeah, even outside of this ruling, there's always been FUD floating around over things like Mono, which is a re-implementation of the .NET API, and again about Wine and things like that, about how, oh, they could be things that are a legal issue that, you know, Microsoft's just letting you get comfortable and then they're going to come out from behind a tree and say, ah, ha, 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 ha. But now we know that it's not going to happen. We're pretty much okay. So that's some good news to finish on. And that's all the news for this week. And that's all for episode 5. Thank you very much for listening. Next week, we'll be discussing how much desktop environments actually matter. If you'd like to get in touch before then, you can email us, show@ubuntupodcast.org, and you can come and chat with us at ubuntupodcast.org Telegram. And if you'd like to keep us sounding amazing, you can contribute to our Patreon to cover our production costs. And you can find out how to do that at ubuntupodcast.org/donate.